Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Friday. We are live in Los Angeles, and this is the Herd. Wherever you may be, however you may be listening, Andy Reid's on the show today, Super Bowl winning Kansas City Chiefs coach. We're on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. And Joy Taylor is joining me through another week. In 3 hours, we'll be through another week. I'm going to take Monday off, but here we are. We're getting dates now. We're going to have the MLS July 8th. My prediction is baseball will be July 10th, and we're going to hear about it within 36 to 24 hours. NBA players are grumbling. That's going to be July 30th. How are you?
I'm great. Yeah, they moved it up a day.
They moved it up a day.
Interesting.
Yeah. So one of the things I've always liked about the NFL, there's a couple of things I like about the NFL. Number one, they're always willing to change. And I've said this before. I grew up as a young kid. I was a baseball fan. And I was a baseball play-by-play announcer. My first play-by-play, when I wanted to be a sportscaster in college, I was on a 10-watt station in Eastern Washington doing baseball games. And I can still watch baseball postseason. But I think what's always kind of turned me on to the NFL is they're constantly elevating the league, and they're constantly changing to make it a better product. But there's been one thing about the NFL. They have never been what you would call player-friendly. It's always been sort of like the owner, the GM, and the coach run it. I understand that that's business. I mean, I don't have what power do I have here? Broadcasting's the same way. It's largely I have bosses. I've got a Murdoch. I've got my bosses. And then I come on and talk. And if they're in a good mood, I can come and talk tomorrow. But times are changing. And players make more. And players, frankly, if you watch the NFL, they matter more. Quarterbacks now matter more. And I think the NFL, with Colin Kaepernick, is now showing what the strength of the league is. In the last week, Roger Goodell went to, I think, his basement and said, I'm not going to worry about Trump's tweets. I'm with the players. And then 2 days ago, we're going to give $250 million over the next decade to social justice campaigns. And the next part of that is, I'm listening to my players. We got to make it right with Kaepernick. And 32% of Americans are still outraged. If you want to be outraged and take away 9 to 10 hours of Sunday enjoyment, go for it. I'm not. Okay? I never loved him protesting at work. I don't think I could ever do that. But I was never bothered by the protest itself. That's what we're based on. He's going to get a tryout. Pete Carroll, Seattle Seahawks coach, yesterday admitted he got a call.
So I know, you know, somebody's interested, you know, and he, you know, so we'll see what happens with that. I thought that was, the irony of that was crazy, because I knew I was coming on your press conference. You guys are going to ask me a million questions about this today. I got a phone call today for the first time.
It's happening. I'm with the players. $250 million. Cap, they're going to do right by him. He's going to get a tryout. He's 6'4 and a half. He's lean. He's athletic and he's mobile. He's got a big arm. Not always the best touch, big arm. And I do think 3.5 years of inactivity, it is a long time. His rust will have rust. But this is why I like the NFL. Like, they're not needing to be right. They're trying to get it right by the players. And this has always been kind of the last league where the players feel like, even star quarterbacks, I want out of here. Franchise. I still want out of here. We'll franchise you again. I've never liked a franchise tag. I like players having the same rights I do. Mobility. Now, I do think you should have to stay a place 4 and 5 years. And the NBA structure is they pay you more if you stay. But if you want to leave, I've done this, you should be able to leave. If you think you want better management, better opportunities, you want to play more. And I think the NFL now is doing what turned me on to them years ago and took me from a baseball fan to a football fan. They're constantly listening and changing and being nimble. And some people will say this is a weakness. I don't. I don't. He's got two things going for him, Colin Kaepernick. One, the NFL stylistically is moving into his style of play. And number two is there are reports now. Bruce Arians said this week, I may carry three quarterbacks. With the virus, I got to have a third quarterback. If that's the case, he's making the league. This is why I like the NFL. I don't always have to agree with them. But if I feel you're trying, if you're listening and evolving, I'm in. And the Kaepernick thing, it's going to happen. Nick Wright says, hey, before you count him out, he may be rusty, but he is an NFL quarterback.
I think he's good enough to be one of the 75 guys that's on a roster. I mean, I agree we're in the golden age of quarterbacking, but the backup quarterback for this upcoming season for the defending Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs is Chad Henne, who has thrown five passes since Cap was a starter. In the last 4 years, Cap might have missed three of them. He still managed to throw 330 passes in those 4 years. Henne's thrown five. And we are also seeing a shift stylistically to where more and more quarterbacks play Cap style.
It's happening. Pete Carroll says, I'm getting calls. It's happening. So why I like the NFL. Listening to the players. The last league to empower the players. But it's a new world. And by the way, that world now is $40 million quarterbacks and $4 or $5 billion franchises, and you should listen to them, at least more than you have. Okay, I'm going to strongly disagree with this opinion coming up, but that's what this show is all about. Chris Sims played in the NFL, Phil Sims' son. He is not a fan of Tua. He is a big fan of Jarrett Stidham. I am opposed to both those opinions. Here he was on Boston Radio.
Yeah, he's not a proven commodity. I'm not so sure what he is yet, but I do like him, and I rank him in front of some other people who are certainly more proven, like, you know, a Marcus Mariota or a Brian Hoyer.
Like, why is he ahead of Tua?
Because he's more talented than Tua.
Really?
Tua's a creation of Alabama. I mean, what do you don't think that Jarrett Stidham would have
just... Now you're speaking my language. Now you're speaking the truth.
Jarrett Stidham or, like, Justin Herbert would have set the world on fire if they got to play with four first-round receivers and two first-round tackles.
Okay, so Tua is a creation of Alabama. Now, I know what you're thinking. Oh, Coward's going to bristle. So let's just take the emotion out of it. There's an argument to be made Tua could be a creation of Alabama. Since Nick Saban took over Alabama, 97 players have been drafted. Only 14 have been Pro Bowlers, and only one's a first-ballot Hall of Famer, Julio Jones. I like Minka Fitzpatrick and Derrick Henry and C.J. Mosley when he's healthy a lot, but those aren't great odds. And many of those are defensive players, the core strength of Alabama. None of his quarterbacks have done anything. It's a safe offensive system where the quarterback rarely gets hit and throws to first-round wide receivers and tight ends. That is not how the NFL works. Quarterbacks, find me the litany of NFL starting quarterbacks from LSU and Alabama and Ohio State and USC, and there are not many. In fact, here's last year's playoff quarterbacks, Joy. In the AFC, they went to college at Wyoming, Texas A&M, Texas Tech, one power Clemson, Michigan, Louisville. That's a basketball school. The NFC quarterbacks, the better conference, Eastern Illinois, Junior College Cal, Purdue, North Dakota State, and NC State, Wisconsin, Michigan State. One world-class power Clemson, and they weren't a power before Deshaun Watson got there. Chris Sims may be right. Now, in this instance, I think Tua has the instincts, kind of the intuitive feel for the game from the first time I saw him on tape that few have. But the line, a creation of Alabama, is very real if you look at what works in the NFL. For a quarterback in the NFL, it's 75% discomfort and 25% comfort. In college football at powerful schools, it's 75% comfort and 25% discomfort. So the more times you can get hit, 24 starts for Tua at college, 23 of 24, LSU the exception this year, he had better talent around him. Now, I think Tua is different. I think he's unique. his leadership skills, his accuracy, his ability to see the field. I don't worry about the injury like everybody else. But before you bristle, no. Look at the playoff quarterbacks not named Deshaun Watson. They mostly come from basketball schools. They didn't play with NFL offensive linemen. It was a series of 3, 4, and 5 years of discomfort. I'm here to see it. I think two is going to work. But before you dismiss the comments, we have a history where great college programs do not produce great playoff-winning quarterbacks, at least in the last 20 years.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
So here's a story that is kind of developing. Yahoo, significant number of players in the NBA disappointed their voice wasn't heard in a decision to restart the season. Well, to that I would say they probably talked to 7 or 8 of the most powerful voices. That's generally how it works. And others believe black players sequestered to entertain and ease the league's economic burden amid racial tension is bad optics. One of the things I've said about this, when I looked at the NBA and the challenge, you know, baseball hadn't started, NFL hadn't started, college football hadn't started. It's very difficult for a sport in the middle of a season. You know, you're taking a road trip with your family, and halfway through it, you have a major crisis. To me, the answer is simplicity. How do we just shorten the season, make it quick? I thought we should have 16 teams go right to the playoffs, play in about 4 different arenas around the country, Dallas, Orlando, Los Angeles, you know, allow the players, families to be fairly close, Eastern players, Midwestern players, and Western players. That was my initial plan. And let's get right to the playoffs. Let's not have more coaches, more teams, more trainers, more bodies, more older bodies who are prone to problems with COVID-19. Instead, the NBA, I think, tried to appease a lot of people. Now we've got 22 teams, and that's more players and coaches, and they're in one area. And I think the more players sit and think and talk and sit on the back porch and have a glass of wine and talk to their wife and think, I could be gone for 67 days and I'm sequestered and NFL guys aren't and baseball guys aren't and college football teams aren't and I'm sequestered. And I get it. You went from isolation of COVID to isolation in Orlando. That is a big ask. And listen, I'm an optimistic person, but after about 12 weeks, I was getting like COVID fatigue. Like, you know, you're asking players to go from isolation to now the bubble, more isolation. It is a tough ask. It is a tough ask here. The initial reaction is going to be, I can't believe these players. I can. Believe me, I can. Rick Bucher's joining us, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. Let's bring him in, Fox Sports NBA analyst. Does it feel like to you, with the story surfacing now today, Rick, that this thing could potentially unravel? I mean, they don't even report until July 8th. That's 3.5 yeah. weeks from today.
I don't know that it's going to unravel, because the financial impact on both the players and the league is so great that you have to come back and play. You have to come back and play in some form or fashion. Now, did they bring too many teams back? Yeah, I believe that they did. And I hate to be a conspiracy theorist, but they orchestrated this so that you could get Zion Williamson back, because he's such a draw. Has anybody seen Zion Williamson? I want to know what kind of shape he's in. How much of Zion Williamson are we actually going to see when we see everybody back? But the reality of it is that if they had not come back and played, and they didn't get a certain number of games in, that the owners would have gone back to the drawing board and said, if we're not playing, we are taking such a financial hit, and our salary cap mechanism for next season is so problematic, because so many teams will be technically over the cap or paying the luxury tax, we're going to have to tear up the collective bargaining agreement and start over. And nobody wanted to see that happen, because that honestly would put next season in jeopardy. This is always the problem, though, when it comes to players not feeling like their voice is heard. Since I've been covering the league, this has been a problem with the rank and file. The Kawhi Leonards and the LeBron Jameses and maybe even the Chris Pauls, they all want to play because they have something to play for. They have a championship to get out of this. The vast majority of the players are now looking at it going, I'm going to come back. I got to spend a month to get back in shape. I'm going to play 8, 9, maybe 12, 15 games, and then I'm done, and I'm going to be sequestered for 2 months for all of that. The reality of that is starting to hurt, to hit. But the truth of the matter is, the other side of it is that we would see a brand new collective bargaining agreement, and the players would probably take a harsher...
Yes.
There would be a harsher impact for them if that happened than whatever they have to endure for a couple of months.
Yeah, no, that there's if there's a new CBA with the cap coming down and revenues coming down, that is not good for the players. Let's just talk specifically about LeBron James. When I saw that story this morning that players are unhappy, my first thing is, well, is LeBron happy? Because I felt this with Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan had an incredible close relationship with the late Commissioner David Stern. He did matter more. He changed marketing. He changed ratings. He changed net worth of franchise owners. Do we still believe that LeBron is all in?
I do believe that he looks at this and says, I don't know what next year holds. Like, can I get another championship? This is an opportunity for me to be able to do that. So I do believe that initially he looked at all the reasons why this was going to be difficult and it was going to be more challenging. Well, it is. I talked to an assistant coach on one of the teams that has a chance at winning the championship this year. And he said, the mental challenge is going to be the biggest part of this. Whoever is the mentally toughest team is ultimately going to get this done. And I believe that LeBron thinks, you know what, when it comes to being able to overcome the mental challenge, I've got as good a chance as anybody else. I want to go ahead and get this done. It's the rest of the guys who are looking at it saying, tell me again why I'm coming back to do this, because I don't see the return. Only if you have a shot at winning a championship is there a reason that you would be all in for making this happen.
You know, it was interesting. Daryl Morey this week kind of took a shot at the media, and he said, you know, I don't think the media is fair with James Harden. And, you know, James Harden, I think most people, he treats the media well. Kawhi doesn't talk to us. Kevin Durant's prickly. Westbrook yells at us, and we're fine with them. It is interesting, though, that this is the second or third time that Daryl Morey has felt it necessary to defend James Harden, which is more interesting to me than the actual defense of James Harden. Right. Why does he feel a need to defend him? Is Harden unhappy? I mean, why does he feel the need to speak on his behalf? That, to me, is the real question.
So, because if you look at all of the moves that Daryl has made, Daryl has constantly tried to reconstitute this team to give James Harden an opportunity to win a championship. And let's face it, it has been interesting, but they've never been the team to beat. And where they are financially now is they're stuck. They're not going to be able to add pieces. They're going to have to remove a few. And so I understand why he's making that argument. This going all the way back to why Oklahoma City traded James Harden in the first place. Number one, he didn't want to be there and didn't want to be the third wheel behind Russell and Kevin. But the other part of it was that Sam Presti looked at it and said, if we don't win a championship, I need to have the requisite assets to be able to go to Kevin and Russell and say, but we can still add something. We can still get better. What do we need to add to this equation to make us better? They got draft picks. They got young players. There was always the hope that they could be better. When you look at the Rockets right now, where they are financially and where they are with their talent, there are no up-and-coming young players. There's no Shai Gilgeous-Alexander that you can say, hey, you know what? He's not quite there, but he'll be even better next year. There's hope for the future. Financially, they're going to have to get rid of a key piece. They may even have to move Russell Westbrook. So that's where I think Daryl is anticipating, you know what? We didn't get there, and we're not going up the mountain. We're coming back down.
Yeah. Rick Bucher is joining us. As I look at this 22-team format, I do think it's too many teams. Do you think there's any chance over the next week? Adam Silver, you know, he embraced gambling. He listens to players. It's a player-run league. Is there just the chance that he'd go, you know what? I'm watching everybody go back to college. I have mostly 25 to 30-year-old males. We're going to play in Orlando, Dallas, L.A. That there is a chance that he would just say, our players are unhappy. Like a lot of them, 40 and 50. This is unraveling. Even 50% chance that you would have a season, but he would literally on a dime change it and break it up to appease players.
No chance, as long as he feels there's a health risk involved, that there's still the uncertainty of how does the virus spread? Can we keep everybody safe? I mean, that is first and foremost, because, and I posited this question the other day, what's worse, that Major League Baseball never comes back, or the NBA comes back and then has to stop and shut it down because they've had some sort of an outbreak, or they've had enough guys that contracted the virus where they had to quarantine them and it just disrupted the proceedings enough so that you didn't think it was a legitimate playoff scenario. I don't know, but that's the number one thing now that they've said we're coming back and playing, is that Adam has to make certain that the pandemic does not intrude upon the continuation of this season. And until he feels comfortable enough that that can't happen, he's going to maintain this. Now, can we get to a point where we get past the training camp and we get into the regular season, where we are a month from now, and he loosens the restrictions in terms of going in and out of the bubble? Yes, I could see that. And I could see that would ultimately relieve players enough to say, okay, we can continue with this. Right. But I can't see a situation where he says, we're going to go back to the drawing board, or we're going to have multiple places, or we're going to change it dramatically. Because as he has said, and I believe he's being truthful, the health of the players, and more important, not allowing the pandemic to force them to a full stop, is his number one priority.
Rick Bucher, good seeing you, bud. Have a good weekend.
You too.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
I have sympathy for anybody that does what we do for a living, which is talk about sports, and there are no sports. We can't quite explain it, but our podcasts, our radio ratings, our digital's gone up. Our impressions have gone up on social media. Is it just because people are home, or are we just that brilliant? Anyway, the point being is people are doing lists. They're doing creative guests. We're doing what we can to fill space. We're the opposite now of political pundits who have never had more politics to talk about. We have no sports to talk about, but we get through it. We've had some incredible guests. Yesterday we had four great guests. So here's a list that I actually thought was fascinating. And I not only do I think it's interesting, I think it matters. So ESPN went out, my former employer, and said, okay, we're going to do a continuity list. We're going to take how many offensive snaps are returning this year. Because nobody had an OTA, we're going to have a shortened preseason. There's not going to be as many practices. So the veteran teams have an advantage. So they took your offensive snaps that are returning this year, your defensive snaps, players that are returning, your coordinators, your non-coordinators, your starting quarterback, your coach. Continuity. Who has the most continuity in the league? So here's the top five teams in continuity. What do they have in common? Buffalo 1, Kansas City 2, Colts 3, 49ers 4, Steelers 5. In my opinion, what they have in common is great general managers. Brandon Bean of the Bills is excellent. Brett Veach of the Chiefs, Chris Ballard of the Colts, John Lynch of the 49ers, Kevin Colbert. They don't all have world-class quarterbacks. They don't have Hall of Fame head coaches yet. We don't know if Sean McDermott's going to be a Hall of Fame coach. but they've all got really highly thought of GMs. What does that mean? GMs are underrated. Now, to prove my point, because you know I like being right, let's go to the five teams with the least continuity. Look at this list. It's very funny. So it's Cleveland, New England, Dallas, the Giants, and Carolina. So what about their GM situation? Cleveland's got a new one. The Patriots don't really have one. The owner is the Cowboys. The Giants have a meh GM. And Carolina's guy is in a full reboot. GMs matter. If you start looking at the bottom five and the top five, the thread, who's running it? Remember, the GM hires the coach and the GM finds and drafts the quarterback and runs the scouting department. I don't think there's any league because, you know, we know this in the NBA. The players get on the phone and they talk and they move, you know, Paul George, Kawhi, they move and change a franchise. It's very fair to say it. Star players really shape the NBA. You know, I think coaches matter. GMs are important. Star players change the league. They run the league. That's the way it works. You know, in baseball, I would say certain agents like Scott Boras. I mean, we know managers don't matter as much in baseball. How do we know? Because the average salary for a baseball manager is $700,000. Now, think about that. You coach in big cities for 162 games, and you make $700,000. Boise State's football coach makes 2.5 times that. So in college football, you work in small towns without the commerce. You coach 12 games, and on average, a college football coach makes $2 million a year. They don't like to coach at USC right now. A lot of fans don't. He makes $4.5 million. Okay, he was just ranked the 7th best Pac-12 coach yesterday. So the point being, we know it's not the manager in baseball. The general managers analytically matter, but in the end, it's the agent positioning players. In the NFL, the power base starts with the general manager. And there's two teams that jumped out to me. Let's first talk about Kansas City. When I look at Kansas City, they have something I think is very important, and this is why they could run the AFC for a long time. They have an A, owner, GM, coach, quarterback. Quarterback's A+, A's. If you have an A in all four leadership positions in the NFL, you are a Super Bowl favorite or a Super Bowl bubble team every year. What is interesting is Baltimore is spectacular, but I believe Kansas City's got the better quarterback and the better coach, and you can argue the slightly better GM. Owners, they're both capable. So I sit to myself and I think, Kansas City's got the second most, 85% of their snaps are returning. Is Baltimore going to become the Steelers? Really good, but it's Peyton Manning and Tom Brady just edging them out, and you feel like at the end of it, I got a Super Bowl, but man, we left a lot on the table. Will Baltimore, because of Kansas City and the four A's, A+ with Mahomes, I look at their continuity and I'm like, man, this is going to be a tough beat. This is going to be a tough beat in a season with a virus. And then the team on the other side I think of, on the bottom five, is Dallas. So we got a virus. They don't have Dak's contract figured out. They have no continuity, new coordinator, new coach. I have usually been pretty favorable to the Cowboys. I don't think I have a Cowboy brand, but I've usually thought they're better run than people think. They draft better than people think. I am not in on the Cowboys this year. I'm just not. This list, I kind of doubles down for me. Like, just not the continuity. They don't have Dak buttoned up. I'm not sure McCarthy loves Dak. We got new coordinators, too many holes, too much new. This is just not, I don't feel great about the Cowboys this year. The good news for Dallas, they've added a 7th playoff team in both the AFC and the NFC, and I think they have a chance to be the 7th. But this is a rare year for me. I just don't feel it with Dallas at all. I look at this list this morning, I'm like, man, you got to get Dak buttoned up. They don't have that buttoned up. They got new things everywhere. They got holes over their defense. They're bringing in Alden Smith, crossing their fingers that he has an impact. I just don't like the vibe of Dallas this year at all.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
He's been one of my favorite coaches for a long time. I talk about how one of the things I like about the NFL, it can be a little bit the opposite of baseball, where it's always trying to elevate as a consumer, as a football watcher. I like creative coaches. I remember saying this about, it's probably about 12 years ago, I said, Philadelphia is a tough town. And this Andy Reid guy and this Belichick guy, they throw it on third and three. They're like, they're not doing the old school football. This just looks different. And I love it. I think we're seeing it with quarterback play. The NFL is adopting college schemes. And I just don't think it's a good time to be rigid in America, whether you're a coach, a GM, a player, or a commissioner. And one of my favorite people, Andy Reid, is now joining me via the Coward Global Satellite Network. You know, it's funny now. For years and years, everybody knew Andy, you were a great coach. But, you know, the Philadelphia talk show hosts, oh, the big game, Andy, you got to win. Well, you won the big game. So do you sleep just a little better this offseason knowing you got that puppy and nobody can take it away from you?
Well, Colin, I'm one of the few chubby guys that doesn't sleep a whole lot. But when I do, I've always slept pretty good. So I don't let those things bother me.
You know, you have one of eight teams with five primetime games. You are the target. Everybody wants you on TV. Your schedule is going to change. Is that okay for you? Or does that create some obstacles in training and preparing, being on television in different times?
Yeah, how great is that, though? I mean, that's almost a reward for the hard work that our guys have put in, and whether it's the coaches or the players, it's a great tribute to the organization and how they handle themselves. So I look at it like, let's go, man. Wherever you want to play, you want to take us to McDonald's, we'll play there. It really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what time. We take it as a nice compliment.
You have unbelievable continuity. Only the Buffalo Bills slightly have more continuity among players, coaches, assistants than you do. How big of an advantage is that in the year of COVID that everybody's virtually coming back?
Well, listen, it's like you. Joy is phenomenal. So I'm lucky to have great assistants that just bust their tail, and they like being here. So we've been able to keep guys here. Clark Hunt sets it up that way, and where it's like, there's a family atmosphere to it. So some of these guys are younger guys, got some kids. And in this time right now, just like you said, when time is of the essence, it's great to have everybody coming back. And Brett Veach, on top of this, Colin, has done a great job in bringing players back. So he re-signed a bunch of guys to keep that continuity there with the team.
You know, Andy, it's really interesting that, you know, the famous line by Bill Parcells, if I'm going to cook the dinner, I want to shop for some food. But I would say even more so in your case, because of your stylistic coaching and your creative nature, it's really important for an Andy Reid to have a great relationship with a general manager because you are different. You don't have a classic system. You're kind of like, hey, give me the players. You know, this is what I'll do with them. Do you want a lot of say in your personnel at a college, or do you just give him what works for you? Or do you ever twist his arm? Do you want power in drafting and getting players to work with Patrick?
You know what, for 14 years in Kansas City, in Philadelphia, I did that. So, I mean, I had say on it, and I wanted to be involved, and so I was. And I made the final decisions on things. I got here, and I just wanted to coach. I wanted to get back to the thing that I loved doing most. Doris was here, who I had a relationship with, John Dorsey. Brett Veach came along with us from Philadelphia, and Brett was an up-and-comer. And when Doris stepped aside, then Brett stepped in and has done an unbelievable job. Pat Mahomes really is here because of Brett Veach and the effort in which he put in to find him. He wore Dorsey and I out on this kid. And so that's how we ended up taking him. It was just Brett relentlessly hammering us. And he did the same thing in Philadelphia with LeSean McCoy and Deshaun Jackson and Cox. I mean, all the guys, the major guys there, he was involved with and responsible for having us take him.
You know, it is when you get a Hall of Fame coach like you and a Hall of Fame quarterback talent like Mahomes, you're going to have quite a run here. At some point, you're going to have to pay him some money, and then you have to make some decisions on protection, and that's the world. But you got about a year and a half of you should be okay on that spot. But I look at Patrick, and I've seen him in public twice, and the social justice stuff he talked about this week. I feel like you guys are so lucky. His personality, he's such a good kid. And I just want you to talk about the value of that beyond having a great arm and being a great athlete. The value that Mahomes brings to the franchise as a human being.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as great a player as he is, he's even a better human being. He's smart. He gets it. You know, Colin, when you find guys that kind of have a pulse on life, even at a young age in which he is, he understands, and he's able to navigate him through. He's able to navigate through tough situations, and whether it's in a game and or off of the field, and he cares about people. I mean, he loves people. He wants to. You see him sitting at all tables, man. I mean, he can go around the dinner table and talk to anybody, and it's a joy to be around. And the greatest part about this, Colin, is. He's so young, and he's just going to keep getting better. On my end, the football side, he's just going to keep growing and growing.
Now, he's won a Super Bowl. Can you yell at him anymore? What if you're upset with him? Can you bark at him?
Well, I really don't have to bark at him too much. I try to communicate the best I can and teach. I mean, that's what we're here to do. And, you know, in this day and age, you do too much barking and guys kind of turn you off, and then you're not getting in the full message. So I'm finding a way to ear canal them a certain way, right, and get it in there where we can get it deep in the id, and they remember it when the clock's running down and big guys are chasing them. So
you are maybe the only coach that's given Belichick fits, and one of the reasons I believe is because he eats up system guys. But guys that come in every September with new looks and new wrinkles, and Bill hasn't seen it, frustrate even the greatest coaches. So I know in this pandemic, you've been just drawing up plays. I know you. You're sitting up there drawing all this craziness. If I said to you, first snap, September 10th, September 12th, how many new plays? Have you just sat with your wizard board and drawn up?
Well, that's what we do. And so I've had a lot of time to do it, and I love doing that part of it. And we've got some good stuff. And the challenge is to keep challenging Patrick and to keep him growing, to give him that opportunity. Players hate to be sitting there stagnant. So it's one thing you love doing as a coach is just finding that one more thing that you can get to even make them greater than they already are. So that's what we do, and we enjoy doing it. And I've got a lot of time to do it, and we've got some really good stuff, man. I can't wait. I know you're picking the Denver Broncos, but I can't wait, man, to jump in and get this thing rolling.
Well, come on. So I have time to amend my picks, Andy. It's June, for gosh sakes.
All right. I thought I'd put this shirt on to kind of remind you, that it's time to go almost, and that you get the right team right.
All right. We'll have to readjust that. Finally, had you ever had barbecue before you got to Kansas City?
Well, I had, but it was on my hibachi in the backyard in Los Angeles. So it's a lot different than it is here. This is big time. And I'm trying to find one, and this is a real goal. I'm trying to find one that I don't like. So they all are phenomenal and terrible for my waistline. But it's they take great pride in that here, and it's really fun to be around. They take our parking lot up here once a year, and they have these contests, and I'm begging to be a judge in one of those. They won't let me. I think they're afraid of me eat all the product.
Oh, I love Andy Reid. Great seeing you. Keep grinding away. I'm so happy for you. Say hi to Brett and everybody there for me.
I'll do, Colin. I appreciate you, man. Thank you.